Good morning, and welcome to the CyberSmart Morning News Update. With the always evolving world of cyber threats and defense, you need a source you can trust. FBI retired Special Agent Darren Mott guides you through today's intricate cyber landscape and brings you the latest headlines and insights and what it means to you. Let's dive into today's cyber news.
Good morning, friends. Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. This is the CyberSmart Morning News Update. I am your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. And as we do on Wednesdays, we're going to only look at four articles today and kind of talk about them in a little more depth. One was on almost every news site that I look at. This one was the top of the page. So let's start right into this one. I'm getting this one from Bleeping Computer. Lawrence Abrams, LockBit ransomware admin identified, sanctioned in the US, the UK, and Australia. Why is this big news? Well, because finally, some ransomware actor has been identified after months of teasing. But let's read from the article. The FBI, UK National Crime Agency, and Europol have unveiled sweeping indictments and sanctions against the administrator of the LockBit ransomware operation, with the identity of the Russian threat actor revealed for the first time. According to a new indictment by the U.S. Department of Justice and a press release by the NCA, the LockBit ransomware operator known as LockBit Sup and Putin Crab has been confirmed to be a Russian national named Dmitry Yurevich Koroshev, 31, of Voronezh, Russia, who reportedly earned $100 million as part of the gang's activities. Quote, the sanctions against Russian national Dmitry Koroshev, and his picture is all over the place, the administrator and developer of the LockBit ransomware group, have been announced today by the FCDO alongside the U.S. Department of Treasury's Office of Foreign Asset Control, or OFAC, and the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs, announced the National Crime Agency in the U.K. Koroshev, also known as LockBit Sup, who thrived on anonymity and offered a $10 million reward to anyone who could reveal his identity, will now be subject to a series of asset freezes and travel bans. Today's announcement also included sanctions against Koroshev, including asset freezes. Well, that's the same line, okay? The administrator and developer of LockBit, a Russian national, is now subject to a series of asset freezes and travel bans issued by the UK Foreign, Commonwealth, and Development Office alongside the U.S. Department of Treasury's Office of Foreign Asset Control and the Australian Department of Foreign Trades and Affairs and Trade, read an announcement from Europol. These sanctions will cause massive disruptions to the ransomware operation, as paying a ransom could potentially break sanctions and impose government fines on companies. Now, the one thing I will say, let me say something about that line. That's very true, that if they have his Bitcoin address and stuff like that, or blockchain address, that if you become victimized by LockBit and you pay the ransom, you could be fined. But they're just going to change the address, so it's really not going to matter, because that particular address will not be on the sanction list, but okay. As in the past, similar sanctions cause some ransomware negotiators to no longer assist in ransom payments for sanctioned ransomware operations. The U.S. also offers a $10 million reward for information leading to LockBit Sup's arrest and or conviction of part of the Rewards for Justice program. So, is this good? Now, yes, because earlier, five other LockBit members were charged by the U.S. government. Now, keep in mind, these guys are all mostly in Russia, except for one, Mikolai Veselev, who was actually arrested and sentenced to 4 years in prison. And so you do get arrests when they do not reside in Russia. When they go outside of Russia, that's when they get arrested. This guy, Koroshev, probably not going to leave Russia, or if he is, he's going to do it under an assumed name with $100 million. You can get a fake name and passport and stuff like that and still probably travel around without much risk. But it's good that they are doing this kind of naming and shaming, because it does restrict the flow of these actors to take their stolen money and do whatever they want with it worldwide. So let's be honest, spending the money in Russia is not as much fun as it is spending it in other places of the world. So this will put a damper on Koroshev's social activities. Does it mean he's going to stop doing what he's doing? Probably not. Will it stop ransomware groups across the world from doing what they're doing? Not yet. Until there's some kind of relationship built with Russia that will allow for the extradition of these type of actors, nothing's really going to happen. And that particular interaction is not going to happen anytime soon. I know from which I speak. In 2007 through 2008, I actively worked with Russian FSB officials to try to come up with some kind of working relationship between the FBI and FSB, and it never really went anywhere other than we had discussions. We sat down and talked in St. Petersburg and in Washington. St. Petersburg, Russia, not St. Petersburg, Florida. And never really got too far anywhere, because it's just different different thought processes when it comes to this kind of crime. So good that this happened, right? It's good that we now know who this person is. It's good that his life is disrupted from this. Now, is he going to? I wonder if he's going to send the $10 million to the FBI or Europol or the UK NCA. Probably not, but it's good he's been identified. So a win for the good guys, such that it is. All right, from darkreading.com, Elizabeth Montalbano reporting. City of Wichita public services disrupted after ransomware attack. Subheadline, the city was forced to shut down its IT networks and continue to investigate a major cyber incident that happened over the weekend. Again, there it is, cyber incident. So probably got hit with ransomware. And then, and now we get into the first paragraph. And indeed, it does say that the city of Wichita is investigating a ransomware attack that happened over the weekend, shut down many of the city's networks and resources and services with no current end in sight as to when the systems will be restored. The attack happened on Sunday when ransomware encrypted certain unspecified city systems, according to alert on its website, rendering many core city online services temporarily inaccessible. Officials have enabled business continuity measures in response to the attack and are working with third-party specialists to safely and securely restore the computer network, as well as investigating its origin with law enforcement, according to alert, which was released the same day as the attack. Such quick release of an alert informing citizens of a cyber incident is not always the norm, security experts note. However, with the damage so extensive, affecting everything from the city's airport to its water service to public transit, informing the public can be a helpful way to prepare them for disruptions, notes Malachi Walker, security advisor at the security firm Domain Tools. These disruptions indeed seem numerous. If a frequently asked question section of the city's alerts that address people's chief concern is any indication. With systems down, the city will be going to cash-based systems for paying water bills, riding the bus, attending cultural events, and paying for landfill services, among other services that typically use digital payment options. So this is a big, big hit. And a big issue for the city of Wichita. Not surprising. It's not like this is the first city that has been hit with some kind of ransomware attack. It's Atlanta is probably the most, but Atlanta and Baltimore are the two most famous ransomware attacks of municipal services that caused billions of dollars of damage. This will be in the millions for the city of Wichita, which is not a huge city, which I'm sure this will not be a positive for them going forward. But again, the interesting part that is not obviously listed here and will probably never be listed is how did it happen, right? Did someone click a link? Did someone open an attachment in an email? Was there a vulnerability that they hadn't patched that allowed the bad actors in? That probably more likely, probably their firewall or their Cisco router or something was compromised with some of the recent vulnerabilities that were discovered there. But I'm guessing. I have no idea how to know. But it'd be great if I did know. It'd be great if we all knew. It'd be great if the city of Wichita came out and said, this is exactly what happened to us. So if you are a similar sized city with similar sized limitations when it comes to cybersecurity, learn from our mistake. Do not do these things because this is how the bad guys got in. But I fear, again, we will not see that action. Okay, securityfairs.com, Pierluigi Paganini reporting. MITRE attributes the recent attack to China-linked UNC5221. That was an interesting headline because I was curious. I didn't know MITRE got attacked, but we'll see what this is. So MITRE published more details on the recent security breach, including a timeline of the attack and attribution evidence. Now, MITRE is a government contractor. They do a lot of different, they provide a lot of services to a lot of different government entities. Some of it being cybersecurity related, so this is not a good look for them, but okay, they rely on contracts, not so much commercial stuff, so probably good for them. But it does say MITRE has shared more details on a recent hack, which that in itself is great, including the new malware involved in the attack and a timeline of the attacker's activity. So right here, I am applauding MITRE as much as I can applaud anyone for coming out and saying, here's kind of what happened. In April 2024, MITRE disclosed a security breach in one of its research and prototyping networks. The security team at the organization promptly launched an investigation, logged out the threat actor, and engaged third-party forensic incident response teams to conduct independent analysis in collaboration with internal experts. According to the MITRE Corporation, a nation-state actor, in this case, they're saying China, breached its systems in January 2024 by chaining two Ivante Connect secure zero-day vulnerabilities. So why did this work? Because they didn't know there were vulnerabilities. And so this is why zero days are so effective, especially to state actors, because they do not share them publicly and they can use them for a long period of time. So the dwell time here was about 3 months. In other words, the breach was in January and MITRE didn't discover it until April. Zero-day vulnerability. So we know how they got in. Thumbs up again to MITRE for saying this. MITRE spotted a foreign nation-state actor probing its networked experimentation research and virtualization environment, also called as NERV, used for researching and prototyping. The organization immediately started mitigation actions, which included taking nerve offline. The investigation is still ongoing to determine the extent of the information involved. Now, an interesting thing would be to see if it pivoted to any of the other networks. If this was an isolated network and it was the only network involved, probably they got lucky. But why would a nation-state actor attack this particular network? Well, obviously, experimentation, research, and virtualization environment means they are creating new stuff. And that's what Chinese actors want, and that's kind of why they're probably tying this to a particular Chinese group. But in this case, MITRE researchers reported that the indicators of compromise that were observed during the security breach overlap with those mandating associated with UNC5221, which is a China-linked APT group. The state-sponsored hackers first gaining initial access to NERV on December 31st. Why is that important? New Year's Eve. So chances are the security was not quite as in-depth as it would be at other times of the year. They then deployed the root rot web shell on the system, and then they did a bunch of other stuff. So there's more to this if you want to read it. There's a lot of good intel on this that you can use to see if you have a similar environment. Is it then therefore also at risk? So I highly recommend this. And again, thumbs up to MITRE for giving this information out. HelpNet Security. Sinisa Markovich reporting, and this is more informational than anything else, really. It's a cybercrime stat you can't ignore. In this article, you will find excerpts from various reports that offer stats and insights about the current cybercrime landscape. So I thought this was interesting just to kind of see where we at here in 2024. What are we looking at from a general trend kind of thing? I'm not going to read all these because there's quite a few. I'm going to kind of hit on a couple big ones. Behavioral patterns of ransomware groups are changing. Quarter 2024 resulted in nearly 20% increase in reported victims over quarter one 2023. Despite the disruption of LockBit and the disbandment of ALF-V, two of the largest and most prolific ransomware groups. So why is that important? It means that even though the FBI, the UK National Crime Agency, and so on, as we mentioned earlier, was effective in disrupting the activity of ransomware groups, they're is a reported increase in ransomware. So it's clearly not making it go any better. The number of active ransomware groups more than doubled year over year, increasing 55% from 29 distinct groups in 2023 to 45 in 2020. So more actors getting in the game because it's easy, it's cheap, and they make money at it. Let's see. Bots dominate internet activity, account for nearly half of traffic. For the fifth consecutive year, the proportion of web traffic associated with bad bots grew from 32%. In 2023, up from 30.2 in 2022, while traffic from human users decreased to 50.4, which is interesting because that means most of the traffic is automated. So, okay. So here we go. Cyber criminals use cheap and simple info stealers to exfiltrate data. 61% of data breaches in 2023 involving over 343 million stolen credentials were info stealer malware related. Researchers recaptured nearly 1.38 billion passwords circulating the darknet in 2023, an 81.5% year-over-year increase from 759 in 2022. So, lots of passwords out there. Make sure you're using long, complicated, unique ones for all of your accounts. Scams are becoming more convincing and costly. Purchase return authorization fraud attacks increased 83% over the previous five-month period, with each successful attack leading to approximately $115,000 in potential fraud losses to banks. So this purchase return authorization attack, this is when you get an email that says, hey, you just renewed your McAfee for $400, and you call the number to argue that you did not, and then the hacker ends up frauding you out because they get access to your computer because they make you download a service that gives them remote access. They can then get access to your username and passwords, drain your bank accounts, all that kind of stuff. So they're getting better. AI is part of this as well, making it easier for them to look real and do those kind of things. Last one I'm going to talk about here, API environments becoming hotspots for exploitation. So as APIs, these little programming things that make one service on a website work with another service, are becoming more attackable and becoming a much bigger problem. Not to say you can't use them, shouldn't use them, just be aware of the risks associated there. There's more information in this. If you want to read it, feel free to take a look. As always, the articles in this web in this podcast are listed in the show notes. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back again on Friday with my weekly op-ed. Have a safe day.
CyberSmart Morning News is written and produced by CyberGuy Productions. Feel free to email thoughts, comments, or suggestions to Darren at thecyberguy.com or follow Darren on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/DarrettMott. Thanks for listening.